FM Talk 106.5 midday, or Mobile Mornings. Yeah, that show. On this Wednesday, day after Election Day in the primary runoffs here in Alabama. And it was, I'd say this is a first quarter win. First quarter win for Tommy Tuberville yesterday, because you got to keep everything football, right?
So, of course.
And last night sounded like this.
Thank you, Alabama. Thank you for your trust, your confidence, your message of change is loud and clear. This is a great country we live in. I just talked to Senator Sessions, and he was awesome. He said, Coach, I'm all in. He said, I want to thank him for his service, for what he's done for many years for this state and this country.
I want to congratulate Tommy Tuberville. He ran a really firm, solid race. He was focused on his goal and on winning. He had a plan to do so, and he was able to do so. He is our Republican nominee. We must stand behind him in November.
He had a plan for winning, and he put that plan into action and won. That was the story yesterday. Like I said, it was early on looking at the Wiregrass counties that Sessions had won in the primary that were going one after another to Tuberville. I think that was the writing on the wall early on. But we'll get the expert opinion of our friend Jeff Poor. Of course, you read his work in Lanyap, Yellowhammer News, Breitbart News, and host of the Jeff Poor Show, the hottest radio show in the state of Alabama, joins us now. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for the plug there.
It's hot. It's molten lava hot, and especially on days like today, it has. Dalton asked, did y'all purposely have Jeff coming on Wednesdays all those years ago so you could talk about the election cycles throughout the years? Yeah, that's the reason. That's we had planned it out that way, but it has worked out. It's worked out great for us over the 11 years of the radio station. So let's talk about it. Last night, primary runoff elections. Tommy Tuberville, not just winning a number of votes, but you look at the map, you look at the counties, and other than Mobile, Wilcox, and Madison County, Tuberville swept the state.
Yeah, and early on, you're watching, the rural counties come in early. So, it would stand to reason that that number was going to get tighter as the more urban counties came in, as Madison, Jefferson, Montgomery, and Mobile counties came in, because they had more votes to tabulate. They come in a little slower. Well, it never happened. And, Tuberville showed some real strength. I think it really boils down to two things. It's the recusal, obviously. He's always been fighting that uphill battle. But I think that Trump endorsement really changed it, because some of those counties, Sessions had won on March 3rd. He lost. If it's just a recusal, we're talking 50-50 jump ball. Tuberville still may have won. If it's just the Trump endorsement even, we're maybe talking 50-50 jump ball. And Sessions still had a shot. But overcoming both of those, I believe, was just too much for the Sessions campaign.
Well, in either case, it's really not about Alabama policy in Washington, right? I mean, it was a cult of personality. That's what was up for grabs.
It's that whole Trump versus Trumpism argument, right?
Yeah, and go back, people who didn't hear you talk about that before, because I think that was sentient. Because I've been one that's been telling folks for the longest time, if you like President Trump, the planks of his platform were milled by Jeff Sessions, and you agreed with that, but you said, look at the one that campaigns like Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's the style over substance, and that's where we are in our politics. I mean, there's a lot to learn from it. Is it a name ID type thing now? Are we going to see more and more of this as time goes on? We have celebrity-esque candidates run and win. But I think there's an element of just Tuberville's style lent itself to be more like Trump. Sessions not as like Trump. Now, Sessions very well may have been more Trump-esque in the policies. And I think the policies are important, but I think where the policies do better maybe is in those Rust Belt states, where you have the unions, and you do have that populist impulse with the industrialization of, those industrial factory workers played a bigger role. Because Alabama, while it has become more industrial over the last 50 years, it's not Michigan, right? It's not Pennsylvania. It's not Ohio. And I think that Sessions' message would have worked well up there because that's where Trumpism prevailed. But here in Alabama, it just seems like that style. Somebody's going to go to Washington. Somebody's going to disrupt the system. That is what people were longing for, and that's what prevailed yesterday.
Now, Tuberville, he was out and about in these last few weeks campaigning, but for the most part, kneeled on the ball with the lead. He no debate, as Sessions mentioned a bunch of times, fewer and fewer media appearances, but it appears that worked for him with the endorsement from the president and the name recognition.
Yeah, I guess what do they say? Al Davison's just win, baby, and that's what they did. Their internals must have told them they had this. No unforced errors. Play some prevent defense in the fourth quarter, and you got this, and you might be the next United States Senator.
But this wasn't even close, Jeff. I mean, he could have come out and talked to people and even gaffed once or twice and still won this.
Yeah, and that, I guess, you heard all the same rumblings I heard. I mean, we thought this race was tightening at the end, and that's why they went into hiding. But that turned out not to be the case at all. I mean, there was a lot of negative Tuberville stuff in the media, the national media. Well, why is he hiding? Are they just holding on, just trying to run out the clock? And that was what they were doing. But it turned out, like you said, they didn't really need to do that. I think a big part of this, Sean, is the weird turnout models. And what we saw yesterday for turnout.
Better.
I think a lot of Sessions voters stayed home, though, that would have normally have come out. This race got a lot of national attention. Keep that in mind. Trump tweeting about it, that would have led itself to a little bit higher turnout. Because it becomes closer to 2017 and less like the 2018 gubernatorial race or something, right? And then you would have had a higher turnout. But just based on hot weather and the COVID stuff, you didn't get the turnout that you could have. And I think that turnout, the people that stayed home, were on the Sessions side.
To continue with the cheesy football analogies, now the play clock restarts. A new campaign, basically, for Tuberville as he faces off against Doug Jones for the November election. I know the Alabama Democratic Party on Twitter were already letting Tuberville have it last night. What changes for his campaign? Do we see a debate? We've already got someone asking on the text line, do you think Tuberville will debate Jones?
I think that's highly, highly unlikely. When was the last time we'd seen a Democrat-Republican debate in Alabama? You have to go back to 2006, I think. It just hasn't happened in a long, long time. I don't think you'll see a debate. I do think you'll see a lot of money spent here. We already know Doug Jones has a lot of money. He's got nothing to lose, so he'll throw everything at it. And Tuberville will have money. NRSC is going to back him. Unlike they didn't back Roy Moore, but it looks to me like they're going to back him. They really a lot of the National Republican Party wants this seat back, so they're not going to take a lot of chances. But I just think. Well, with Doug Jones, if you haven't seen some of his ads on television lately, very interesting. I thought Doug Jones was going further to the left. That's where the energy seemed. Black Lives Matter, played it safe with COVID, stay at home, everybody. But that ad, it's back to the Joe Manchin sort of model where he's the moderate again. And he's working with Trump at the Chamber of Commerce.
I thought it was compelling. Now, the problem is, people are not in that ad. They're not talking about the votes that Doug Jones has taken that have been right in line with the Democrat, the National Democrat Party. But in the ad, it definitely is folksy and moderate. Not folksy like goofy folksy, but just regular Alabamian and moderate. It definitely is the message there. It's and you're right. It's everything but what the National Democrat Party is talking about.
Well, here's what's interesting. I don't know if you had the opportunity to watch all of Tuberville's speech. And I've been telling you all this all along, ever since the first time I saw Tuberville at an event up here back in, 2019. He marries the college football locker room talk to red meat politics, conservative politics. And that sells. And it's like I said, you go watch all these candidates. And I've seen them dozens and dozens of times. You look at the guy that can connect with the audience. if the guy, if the audience is sitting there playing Candy Crush on their phone, then that's a signal, right?
Yes.
But Tuberville was always, they were locked on him because he had this weird marriage of, like I said, the conservative politics and the football talk. He gave people, I think, a little dose of that last night, and it sounded to me like they're not going to go play moderate, or, you know, like most candidates or campaigns go moderate after
in the
primary.
General. Sure, in the general, yeah.
Yeah, they are going to go at Doug Jones for abortion, for the Kavanaugh vote, for all of that stuff, and just hammer him on that and really drive out the right, it seems.
One last question for the break here. David from the text line says, do you think a lot of people that voted for Byrne stayed home and didn't vote? I just can't believe they all voted for Tubbs.
Well, the fact they were going for Byrne and not Sessions in the first place tells you they wanted somebody different, anybody different. And I just can't see that mentality, that sentiment changing because it's not Bradley Byrne.
All right, coming right back, more with Jeff Poore, and we'll analyze a little more on the Senate race, but also AL1 and AL2, the stories told there, if you know them, and the Club for Growth angle. Club for Growth winning two of the three elections that they involved themselves in. What about their influence going forward? Did they like their return on investment here? Do you think they're going to stay a part of Alabama politics going forward? Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Shauna Dalton, along with Jeff. Of course, Jeff Poore of the Jeff Poore Show, radio show. Hottest show, state of Alabama. Molten lava on a day like this, too. You can also keep up with him on Twitter on election nights like you do with me. What's your handle over there?
Twitter.com/Jeff_Poore.
In the commentaries last night as the numbers were coming in, people were quickly, as soon as the Tuberville stuff was coming in, they were shifting gears to what we were just talking about the general and Doug Jones in this mix. And did you think that the Doug Jones machine would start early into allegations against Tuberville? Some of the things, I guess, that came up here in the primary runoff. What do you see? I mean, you talked about money for Doug Jones. What do you think about strategy?
Yeah, I absolutely think there are several well-placed journalists at AL.com and the Montgomery Advertiser that are waiting for that oppo dump from the Doug Jones campaign. Or perhaps it's even bigger. They're going to have to try to federalize, nationalize the race again like they did in 17 and get a big Washington Post splash or something and make it a national race. That's the best path for Doug Jones. And Tommy Tuberville's a football coach. There's bound to be players and stories to come out over the next few months as we head into November. I think that's the play there. I don't know that I don't think it works because you have a presidential race going on, and you can sit here today and while the Sessions defeat is national news, it feels a little page two to me. They're going to have to get this race to be a page one race. And can they do that again? That's their best path, but I'm skeptical as to whether or not people around the country will care enough to make this a front-page race.
All right, let's talk about AL1 in the Republican primary runoff. It was Mobile County coming in big for Jerry Carl that set the win for him. I mean, it was all Mobile County.
Yeah, that's what turned the tide. Those early results, it was looking, wow, Hightower might pull this out.
Yeah.
And Club for Growth will flex its muscle for sure. But no, Mobile County coming in late, as it always does, and pushed Jerry Carl over the finish line. So this race went about as expected, though. It was like the only one that went as everyone predicted. We knew it would be tight. But I guess it just showed that to win AL1, you got to have Mobile County. You can't rely on Escambia, Monroe, and Washington, and Clark, and then Baldwin County. It's all about Mobile.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities between Baldwin and Mobile, but the other portions of AL1, I got to admit that I'm a bit ignorant of what drives the votes there. Now, obviously, fewer people, but you had people showing up to vote. In name recognition-wise, is it that Bill Hightower had a state-level name recognition and Jerry Curl had a county level? But Jerry pushed the name thing real hard in his campaign, too, to get that name recognition. What changes in a Monroe County? What changes in a Clark County?
Well, you get to political events in those areas, and I've been to a few. I mean, it's just different. It's really different. It's even different between Mobile and Baldwin County. The some of it's, you know, the obvious, it's more agriculture issues. But, you know, people in those counties, and transportation's a big deal, obviously. When you go, the topics are a little different. The topics tend to be a little more national in Mobile at Republican events and tend to be a little more local and all the other counties, and at least that's what I find, although Baldwin County may be more like Mobile than the others, but there are subtle differences in the Republican electorate in those places, I find, and I don't know that really played out in this campaign, but there are differences. It's a different kind of voter.
Explain AL2 to us. What happened there with and that's the other Club for Growth win. I mean, they won in the Senate primary runoff and in AL2.
That's a fascinating race right there, guys. Jeff Coleman looked like he was just going to waltz right into the United States Congress. If this had been March 31st, he probably would have. What I think changed, a lot of things changed. Obviously, with the delay, I think you've got a little more right of center Tea Party enthusiasm out there. Barry Moore was that guy. Barry Moore, when we were all complaining about the shutdown and what it was doing to the economy, was holding Tea Party-like rallies and going to those events in places like Geneva County and Dale County. And he was really the guy, we got to get open back up. And attach himself to, you know, why are we keeping churches closed down? That's unconstitutional. This is long before the Black Lives Matter stuff started. And I think at that moment, you started watching this and seeing that he was reading the room at the time. Him and Ainsworth. There were a few others around the state. Your friend Chris Elliott, the senator in Baldwin County, Tom Watling at Auburn. Those guys were reading the room at the time with all this coronavirus shutdown. And Barry Moore was one of those guys. And I think that is what sort of turned that campaign and made it closer. And the Coleman campaign, Jeff Coleman, this guy who's a multimillionaire, owns a movie company, an international movie company, and was spent $2 million or something like that. They built a campaign on inevitability. And when it came, push came to shove, and this got close, they didn't have a game plan. They were flat-footed. They were caught off guard. And Barry Moore wins by 20 points in the 2nd Congressional District. He takes almost everything except a couple of counties. Jeff Coleman lost his home county, Houston County.
Wow.
It just shows you got to be able to adapt to the circumstances. And circumstances really changed from when people started qualifying in the fall last year all the way till this spring.
I wonder if there's a big tell there, you know, with Barry Moore and the backing of Club for Growth winning big, and then you seeing those Wiregrass counties that had gone for Sessions going to Tuberville, that if those things weren't connected on who turned out.
Yeah, I think so. I absolutely think that's the case, because it would stand to reason the Tuberville voter is more aligned with a Barry Moore voter, and a Jeff Sessions voter is more aligned with the Coleman, Jeff Coleman. And that seemed to be kind of just the gentleman's agreement there. You know, that was the brand. But I think perhaps you're right in that in some ways Tuberville had coattails from Barry Moore, mm-hmm. because that Trump endorsement was so big. But I'm telling you, Barry Moore really branded himself and positioned himself in a good way. When Barry Moore qualified to run, he was expected to finish by Jessica Taylor, Troy King, and Jeff Coleman. He was expected to finish fourth. He gets a big turnout in Coffee County. He gets Enterprise and Elba and all those places to come out for him. It squeaks his way into that runoff, and now he's going to be United States Congressman.
All right, I have just less than a minute left here, but the late endorsement from Will Ainsworth for Tuberville, do you think that was any kind of it seems like too late to matter, but why? Why do it then?
You do want to get on the winning team. I think it was pretty clear at that point to Will Ainsworth and a lot of people that Tuberville was going to win. It was the same day as the Auburn University of Montgomery poll came out. I just think it wasn't the, hey, I need to get on this wagon. It's going to win. And I need it. That way Tuberville might remember me later on.
There he is. Jeff Four, as always, man. We appreciate our conversations.
Hey, Sean, thanks for having me on.
All right. There he is. Hottest radio show in Alabama, Jeff Four. Be joining us again maybe later this week. I've got more to ask him. And speaking of a recap of last night, Congressman Bradley Byrne is going to join us at noon. A lot to talk about with him from the Senate race and the people going for the AL1 gig as well.
837 on FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing great here at FM Talk 106.5. And for those that are out there looking for a great deal on a new vehicle, you can't beat employee pricing.
That's right. Employee pricing plus a little rebate money. I mean, like I said, like I keep harping on it, the time, if you've looked at a train in the past, it's time to buy one now. Employee pricing plus that $3,500. Don't forget about our used car side. We're trading in fresh trades every day. Got a 19 pickup truck, four-wheel drive, yesterday traded in. I think it's got 20,000 miles on it. It'll be out front. Got a diesel traded in. I think it's got about 150 miles on it, but everybody knows those diesels will go up to about 300,000 miles. Y'all check that out. I know it's hot out there. Y'all check it out on the website at McConnellAutomotive.com. Or if you got any questions, call Gene or I at 251-476-4141.
All right. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, taking your calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. But we could run through a couple other things here on yesterday's election if you want to. Also, some odds and ends story. You know, this one has been in my inbox, I guess, and since the beginning of this week, or that the Carnival Fantasy, our cruise ship, is going to the scrap heap.
Yeah, and that's going to have to be a big scrap heap, right? I'm talking a cruise ship here.
So, but I mean, obviously, the tell is don't hold our breath. You know, we're already kind of the last ones in on the cruise ship world here in Mobile. And then, remember, I don't know if y'all have noticed, it's pandemic, not real good for the cruise business.
Yeah, it's tough for the cruise businesses right now and airplanes, but especially cruises. And yeah, I guess that means we won't be setting sail on the Carnival Fantasy anymore. And I know they have another cruise ship coming in, but I don't think that's here in Mobile, not set to be here till January of 2022, the Carnival Fascination.
Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, they've got to be resetting all that right now, projecting when people start cruising again. Yeah, it says sources familiar. This is from cruiseradio.net. Love. Oh, the cruise radio. Sources familiar with the situation tell Cruise Radio that the Carnival Fantasy has been sold and will soon be heading to her final resting place in Izmir, Turkey. Ship was recently in Curacao offloading heavy equipment and now has filed a voyage plan for Izmir, Turkey, home of one of the largest vessel scrapyards. In a statement to Cruise Radio, Carnival said our parent company, Carnival Corporation, said in its quarterly earnings call last Friday that the company was going to remove 13 ships across the corporate fleet. What ships, if any, from Carnival Cruise Line fleet may be involved in this capacity reduction have not been identified. But it looks like, you know, the fact that it's going to the scrap heap means Fantasy is out.
I hope they get all that duty-free alcohol off of the ship before
they
scrap it.
Are you volunteering to help?
I'll totally help out. I've got plenty of room at the house.
So this is one of the stories going on out there. Another one, I'd like to just compare some numbers here. That I don't know if we can fully flesh this out this hour, but the school. So we asked this question two places. Online opinion poll question on our website, all right? On the website, it says under the 1-800-GOT-JUNK logo, do you feel safe sending your children back to school this fall? 94% of y'all said yes. Actually, let me see if the refresh thing... 94... Oh, no, I'm sorry, it's moved. It's, I got to refresh it each. 88% now say yes.
Okay.
12% say no. Okay. Now, on our Facebook page, Leanna does the same thing, but much better when she asks the question on Facebook because she has the emojis and graphics and makes things look really good. But right now it's, 74% yes, 21% no. So,
wow.
It's a little different there. But that's a, and I'm looking at the comments here. There's a lot of people on there saying that yes, send kids back. But there's a few saying no on this. And then you and I had seen, I think it was Axios yesterday, had some polling out about how people were going to, how they felt across the country about sending schools back and kids back to school in the fall. And they broke it down for Democrats and Republicans, also by race.
Yeah, they did. And I've got the Axios poll here. They said, how much of a risk to your health and well-being do you think sending your child to school in the fall is? 43% said large risk, 28% moderate risk, so total those together, 71% say moderate or large risk, only 22% said small risk, and 8% no risk. And they had quite a few other interesting stats here on that Axios poll. I'm trying to find the breakdown for race and male-female on that poll.
No, it said, yeah, it was, I think, 89% of Black Americans surveyed in this said that it was a large or moderate risk. 80% of Hispanics saying it's a larger moderate risk. 64% of whites saying a larger moderate risk. I don't know why it breaks down. Well, I could probably do politics on this. On the race thing, male, 72% said it was a larger moderate risk, and 70% female, because those women want the kids out of the house.
Yeah.
And Democrats was, here, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting, and I think you have the specific numbers, but even a majority of Republicans said larger moderate risk.
82% of Democrats in this poll said a larger moderate risk sending the kids back. Okay, and you'd like, okay, expect that. 53% of Republicans said that as well, so a plurality of Republicans. The problem is here, and the missus and I talked about this last night, there are stats out there and or research out there that shows that kids are a lot less capable of passing this long. It affects them less, and they pass along less. But I will put this caveat in there that it seems like every 2 weeks, whatever the study 2 weeks ago was, gets discounted by a new study. So I don't know which way you can say there's that info, but then I also know enough to say just wait, that may change again. And then what people want to have happen here, it's just like the mask thing. You want a higher authority to say that, so you're not responsible for it. You were ranting about this the other day about elected officials not doing their job, right? Wanting somebody else to CYA. Well, there's some of this here too, because if you have a local school district versus a state board versus the feds recommending one thing or another, if you then have kids go back to school and somebody gets sick, something, and they, even though I don't think there's going to be any way going forward that you can trace this, and by the way, Montgomery and Washington, if they would move forward with some immunity for businesses and public entities on people being sued because somebody said they caught coronavirus because they went to XYZ, that would change a lot. But right now that's not there, and everybody's trying to get their butts covered. So you have school systems, I'm sure, that some of them are doing it politically just to be contrary to President Trump, but some of them are most likely doing it for liability reasons. They're like, well, if we probably are fine getting school back, but if we do, and then we're going to be told that, this is, and then you've got the, we can do online learning. I'll tell you, this is completely anecdotal. In my house, though, with my two children, one did just fine with the online learning and the computer, and the other one did not.
Yeah, it's tough for a lot of kids out there to do the online learning. But what we have here is another debate, just like we've seen month after month, the known versus the unknown. And the known being that if you don't send kids back to school, parents have to find a way to have those kids cared for, or the parents will not be able to go back to work. That's an economic crisis of its own.
It's huge.
Not sending kids back to school. The unknown would be, can the kids get sick? And there are studies, like you said, can the kids get very sick? What's the fatality rate there? What are the long-term effects of coronavirus? Even if you don't die from the coronavirus, will the long-term health of children that are going to school that catch it, will that harm them in a major way? There's a lot of unknowns regarding the coronavirus and how it will affect the lives of people. But the known argument against that is, once again, economics. What does it mean for the parents that are trying to get back to work?
Yeah, how many businesses and jobs are you going to put at risk trying to say not putting kids at risk?
I think they just need boarding school for everyone. Parents can't see them anymore. It can affect school.
I have a teenager in the house. Don't tempt me. All right, coming straight to the phones when we get back at 343-0106. Hey, thank you, Kane. 850 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. From the text line here, Keith said, again, anecdotal, but a kid went back to Faith Academy for summer camp. She usually got a runny nose or whatever, you know, as they will, being four. Yes, that's for sure. Not now, not the first time. I think the extreme cleaning, safety measures they're taking, etc., are doing what it's supposed to do. Maybe public schools need to take notes from private schools. Then he said also, if you could apologize to Jeff Sessions on behalf of the same people in Alabama, I would appreciate it. What do you say? You saying the people that voted for Tuberville were insane? Is that true? But that's, well, I mean, he won this state, I mean, not just by a little bit, but by a lot of bit.
Yeah, it was a huge win for Tuberville. Regarding the schooling, and, you know, again, anecdotally, since our daycare opened back up for my 17-month-old, we had her in there, you know, both of her parents have to get to work, mm-hmm. and there has not been an issue at where we take her for daycare. So as we talk about school coming back in the fall, and I know looking at some numbers, that I think they said that there have been 125 cases in Mobile County for 0 to 4 years old. There have not been any fatalities, but kind of looking at everything as a whole, we also need to look at some of these daycares that have opened back up and some of these summer camps and see what they're doing that's working and how many cases they've had, and you know, just get a full picture before we completely decide not to send the kids back to school.
Although I then got a text last night from a friend, my phone, on my regular phone, said their 10-month-old tested positive for coronavirus. So I don't know. Let's go to the phones. Dr. Mike's up first in Mobile. Hey, Dr. Mike.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
You know, the thing about sending them to school is, you know, their immune system is what concerns me. I mean, I don't care if you're old or young, your immune system needs to be stimulated. It's just like exercising your muscles. If you don't exercise them, you know, they're going to become, you know, atrophied and flaccid. Your immune system's the same way, and if you're not exposed, getting exposure to different things, you know, even us adults who are, you know, being locked during that lockdown time, I mean, that it definitely had an effect on our immune system. And I understand, you know, for the older, you know, people that are more susceptible, if you have underlying conditions, then yeah. But for kids, I think for their health, it's a good idea to get back to school.
And, you know, there's that part you're talking about, the health side of it. And I can tell you right now, for the economy, it is crucial.
Exactly. It is. And you know, your jobs depend on it. And but I think from a health standpoint, it makes sense, too. And that's just my two cents, and
well, I appreciate
y'all. You guys do a great job.
Thank you, Dr. Mike. We appreciate that. Let's go next to David in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Dalton. You know, Tommy Tuberville wasn't the only winner last night.
No.
A Signal polling group out of Montgomery was also a big winner because the results of last night's race basically broke down, basically almost like they called it.
Let's think about that. Okay, yeah, I remember that Signal. That was like a month ago, right? Or
it was long? Back in late May, yes.
Okay. So the Signal poll, this is good. No, I hadn't even thought about this. Signal had called it. It was a
23-point
lead in the Signal poll, and it ended up being, like, 21 points.
That is, I had forgotten about Signal. They were almost right on it.
Yes, and I actually had Brent Buchanan of Signal on my podcast for my website, and we got to go deep dive into the numbers, and he was saying that Tommy Tuberville's very likely base of support was larger than Jeff Sessions' likely or very likely base of support at the time. So even a low turnout would have ended up benefiting Tuberville, because the very likelies are the ones that are more likely to go out and vote even in a pandemic.
By the way, too, we're just getting this question in on the text line. Do we have a number on percentage of turnout people voting? It was 17.3 or 6?
17. I thought it was 17.2, but
anyway, 17 point something. So I thought that was great success for the state of Alabama. But, you know, Jeff said he thought the number was low. Because there was so much attention on it. Maybe that is. Maybe because there was national attention on it. But I've seen these numbers come in so low in the past that I didn't have great hopes. I think, heck, the Secretary of State during the day said, oh, we're going to have to pull these numbers back. We don't expect it to be as much. And then it came up to 17%.
Exactly, and it's not a record low. It's in the ballpark of record low, because I think the record low was, what, 8%?
Yep.
And then we had a 12%. But also, Coach Tuberville, back during when he was a football coach, won me 6 straight dinners from a bet I had with an Alabama Crimson Tide fan of mine, and he also won me a fat tire last night.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, so you won, yeah. What did we bet? We bet that I lost on Baldwin County, right?
Well, what it was is the ultimate bet was that Coach Tuberville would win Alabama Congressional District 1, which he did, because the vote differential in favor of Tuberville was larger than the vote differential in Mobile County for Sessions.
Okay, so what do I owe you? Just tell me, what's the payoff?
One fat tire.
One fat tire. Okay, so which flavor of fat tire?
The new Belgian Ale fat tire, the regular one.
Okay. All right. There we go. Oh, I guess that's right, because Sierra Nevada has all the others. I'm sorry. I'm so out of it these days, I don't even keep up with my craft beers. David, I'll have to go purchase that over the weekend, and I'll have it for you. Because like a Lannister, I pay my debts.
I was about to say that. You beat me to it. I was going to say every good Sullivan pays his debts.
Yeah. It's just Sullivans and Lannisters, right? I don't think there's many other. Maybe there are other similarities.
Yeah, what other show are you going to get a Game of Thrones and Borat reference in the same 5 minutes?
I'm a strange dude. speak another language. Lots of texts come in here too on the back to school thing. Listen, we're going to keep talking about this going forward. Obviously, this is going to be the biggest discussion from now through August. I think my kid's August 12th or something supposed to go back. It's going to be the biggest discussion going on in the state, around the country, but in the state over the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are going to be, this is really going to get ramped up.
Yep.
Big time. And it's already gotten political. And then you're going to have school system. I think there's going to be a lot of school system worried about their liability in this.
Mm-hmm.
And if that would be solved if they would move with some liability protection at a state and federal level on this.
And what are the financial ramifications of kids coming back to school? We were already talking about yesterday. And colleges too, but they're talking about hiring 300 extra nurses in Alabama to make this thing a reality. But you're exactly right. It's already split down political lines. You've got the Pelosi's fighting against the Trumps. Trump says, send them back to school. Pelosi says, you're sending our kids to a certain death, basically. She did not say that.
But in so many words.
In so many words. So get ready. Another political fight here regarding the kids in school.
All right. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. Be back at noon for Midday Mobile. Our guest in the first hour, Congressman Bradley Byrne. His take on the Senate primary runoff and AL1. Plus, we'll talk some Washington with him.